The scripture reading for today comes from Lamentations, chapter 1, verse 1. This can be found on page 685 in the Bibles provided for you at your seats. If you'd prefer, you may read along with us on the ESV app or esvbible.org. Lamentations, chapter 1, verse 1. How lonely sits the city that was full of people. How like a widow has she become? She who was great among the nations, she who was a princess among the provinces, has become a slave. This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated.
We don't need to look any farther than the first word of the book of Lamentations for us to immediately connect with the content of this book. The first word, the book of Lamentations, you just heard Isaiah read it, is how? How? Who can't relate to asking the question, how? How did this happen? How did I get here? How do I fix this? How do I change? How do I move on? How do I find my way back home? How do I start over? How do I make the drive over there? How do I look them in the eyes once I get there? How do I look at myself in the mirror when I get up tomorrow? Or how do I get out of bed tomorrow? How can I ask for forgiveness? How can I forgive them? How will I ever be able to pray again, sing again, laugh again? How will I ever feel safe again? How? What a bold intro for a book. Where in your life are you asking the question how? Where in your life are you asking the question how? We've all asked the question. And if you're asking that question regarding some aspect of your life, I will say you have come to the right book. How is a key theme in the book of Lamentations? In fact, biblical books, when they were originally written, were given a name that corresponded with the first word. You can see this practice preserved with the book of Genesis. Genesis means beginnings, the first words of Genesis. In the beginning, God created, and Lamentations, the tradition continued. The book of Lamentations was originally titled the Hebrew word Ekka, which just means how. Lamentations is a book called How. And the word how, the question how, appears at three strategic junctures in the book. How appears in 1:1, 2:1, and in 4:1 of the book of Lamentations. But for all its ruminations on the word how that Lamentations does, the interesting thing is Lamentations actually never answers the question how. It takes a surprisingly different approach. Instead of answering the question how, Lamentations teaches us how to ask how. That's the function of the book of Lamentations. And I'd like to dive into that this morning. Lamentations teaches us how to ask how. Let's take a look behind the text so we might understand the political climate during the time of Lamentations. What was going on around the world during the time of Lamentations? There were three world powers at the time that this book was written. And they're represented in three different colors here on this map. There's first the world power of Babylon. Then there's the world power of Assyria. And then finally, over here in brown, the world power of Egypt. These three world powers were constantly plotting. How can we take power and control and land back from these other world powers? Egypt was always trying to get at Assyria. And Assyria was always trying to get at Babylon. And Babylon was always trying to get at Assyria. And Babylon wanted to get down to Egypt. And all the ancient writings, it says Egypt, they wanted to move over into Asia. They were constantly at war with each other. And what's interesting is you think about these three world powers attempting to reclaim territory from each other. They actually can't take the most direct route. If Babylon wants to attack Egypt, it can't bring a whole army across this vast swath of desert. If Assyria wants to get to Egypt, it can't make it, kind of cut the angle and come right this way. The army wouldn't be able to make it through the desert. There wouldn't be enough supplies there. And so eventually, what happened was Babylon conquered Assyria, and you'll see that. Babylon takes that territory. And as Babylon has their sights set on Egypt, again, it's not going to go this way. Babylon, to get to Egypt, must go through Israel and through Judah. And ultimately, Babylon did conquer the known world at the time and became the dominant force of the empire. And in order to get there, remember, Babylon came right down through here, right through Jerusalem, right through Judah. And as Babylon came through Judah and through Jerusalem, there was destruction on a scale that we'll see is described at great detail in the book of Lamentations. And what's interesting, I don't want us to think that this was just a random political act either. This act was prophesied about by the prophets. The prophets were saying, hey, God is trying to get your attention. God is asking you to live in a different way. God is asking you to contemplate the way you are living your life. The prophets predicted that there would be this great war and this great strife that would come about. And ultimately, as Babylon went to conquer Egypt and conquered Jerusalem and Judah in the process, the city of Jerusalem is decimated. The temple, the very place where God's presence rested and resided, was destroyed and reduced to rubble. And the people of Jerusalem and Judah were sent into exile, off into Babylon. You see, this conquest that Babylon went on, it seemingly revoked the promise of land to Abraham. You see, God promised Abraham that he would have a land for his people, that he would be a blessing, and that there would be a son, an heir for Abraham to always occupy this land. And when Babylon destroys the land, what happened to the promise of Abraham, everyone's asking? Babylon not only seemingly revoked the promise to Abraham, Babylon seemingly revoked the promise that God made to King David, that there would always be a Davidic king on the throne in Jerusalem. And Babylon seemingly revoked God's promise to everyone, a promise of loving kindness, steadfast faithfulness, and God's presence. You see, in 586 BC, when Babylon conquered Jerusalem, it seemed that the promise of God had failed. People had been exiled. They had been cut off. And you can read about this, his moment in history, in 2 Kings chapter 25. This will come up on the screen. 2 Kings 25, 26 gives the end of this siege. Lamentations is a poetic version of what happened. And 2 Kings 25 gives you the more historical prose approach to what happened. And I want to look at the very end of this, of what the writer of 2 Kings says about this siege of Jerusalem. Listen to how this ends. 2 Kings 25, 26. Then all the people, both great and small, and the captains and the forces arose and went to Egypt, for they were afraid of the Chaldeans. And Chaldeans is just another word for the Babylonians. You see, as some of the people in the land were exiled to Babylon, there was a small remnant that remained in the land. And they were so scared, they had so much fear and terror, they turned around and went to Egypt. And this is highly symbolic in the Bible. Because what this means is, the writer of 1 Kings is trying to communicate, it's like there was no exodus. As God called us out of slavery to a new and promised land that we inherited, the whole thing has been reversed. We're back in Egypt. There's been no exodus. Our people have been exiled. It seems like they have been cut off from the promises of God. All that took place in 586 BC. And a poet sat down and wrote the book of Lamentations in response. Lamentations is actually five separate poems. Lamentations is five chapters long, and each chapter is its own individual poem. And each chapter, each poem has its own individual theme. And let me walk us through the themes of each chapter and poem. Poem 1, chapter 1, is about the city. And if we were to try to say, what is this attempting to communicate to us? How could we apply this to our own experience of loss and grief and pain? When you look at the city, it's really symbolic of what you lost. Chapter 2, destruction, the destruction. It describes how Jerusalem was destroyed, and that's symbolic of what you experienced. Chapter 3 describes the exile, and that's symbolic of what changed. What's the difference now that this event has taken place? We no longer have the land that God promised to us. We now reside in exile. Chapter 4 is the retelling. It's interesting. After the author talks about the city being destroyed and the destruction, chapter 4, they tell the story over again. And this boils it down to the essence of what cannot be forgotten. When we tell our children and our children's children and our children's children, children's children's children about this event, what must we incorporate? What do they have to know so that this doesn't happen again? Chapter 4, the retelling, what cannot be forgotten. And chapter 5 is the prayer. It's what you said to God when all was said and done. I want to point out one more thing about Lamentations that's going to appear fairly technical about the structure of the book, but I assure you, it's important to understand the structure of the book in order to understand the content of the book. So if you'll just give me another moment as we look at the text here of Lamentations to describe a little bit more of how the author put this together. The dominant structure in Lamentations is that of an alphabetic acrostic. And if you didn't know what that meant coming in, that's okay. Okay, we didn't all have to be poetry majors or anything. So an alphabetic acrostic is this. Each line of a poem starts with a successive letter of the alphabet. So if you're doing this in English, it would be line 1, A, line 2, B, line 3, C, line 4, D, and so on all the way till you got to Z. In Hebrew, the Hebrew language doesn't have 26 letters like English does. Hebrew has 22 letters. So you'll see in chapter 1, it's a 22-stanza alphabetic acrostic. And so each stanza starts with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Again, in English, it would be something like stanza 1 would start with A, stanza 2 would start with B, stanza 3 would start with C, and so on. You can actually see this preserved quite well in the English translation. As you see, chapter 1 has 22 verses that correspond with the 22 stanzas. Chapter 2 is the same thing. Chapter 3 takes the pattern and tweaks it a little bit. Chapter 3 is a 66-line triple alphabetic acrostic. What does that mean? And again, you can see it right in your English translation. If you look at chapter 3, you can see there are 66 verses corresponding to the 66 lines. And what that means is the author went line 1A, line 2A, line 3A, line 4B, line 5B, line 6B, and again, a triple alphabetic acrostic all the way through the text. Chapter 4 goes back to the original pattern of the 22-stanza alphabetic acrostic. And chapter 5, and I find this fascinating, we'll talk about this a little later. Chapter 5 is interesting. It abandons the alphabetic acrostic pattern all the way, but it retains the 22 lines. Isn't that interesting? It says we're not going to do the alphabetic A, B, C, D thing anymore, but it actually retains the same number of lines, again, that correspond with the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. This structure is an aid to the actual content of the book. And remember, Lamentations is a book that teaches us how to ask how. So let's look in front of the text and see how we can apply this book to our own lives and ask that question. How do I ask how? We all have how questions in our lives. So, okay, Lamentations, how do I ask how in my life? The first answer Lamentations provides for us is collectively. We are to ask how collectively. You see, this is where the understanding the acrostic structure is important. The alphabetic acrostic structure was put in place because these poems were meant to be said together. They were meant to be read together, most probably for liturgical use in a worship service much like this. And if you just wrote a random account of what happened, it might be good, it might be accurate, but people wouldn't be able to say it together. These poems were meant to be spoken collectively. Imagine what you might miss if you ask how alone. What might you miss if you go, I just am so frustrated or I'm so embarrassed about my how question. I'm going to go into my closet. I'm going to go on a trip by myself, whatever it might be, and I'm going to start asking how, all isolated and alone. What might you miss? Well, surely you'd miss some perspective that might be able to be offered by somebody else in the community. Surely you would miss the comfort that comes from having someone by your side in the midst of trial or pain. And again, you wouldn't have a community of people ready to move forward together into whatever God had next for you. How to ask how? The first instruction of Lamentations is make sure you ask how collectively, in community, together. Second, Lamentation says, ask how carefully. The acrostic structure deliberately makes you slow down and walk through very methodically everything that happened. Okay, we're going to take step one and talk about A. And we're going to take step two and talk about B. And we're going to take step three and talk about C. And we're going to take step four and talk about D. And we're going to take step five and talk about E. And again, I could keep going. It's already gotten awkward that I get to E. But you see the point. They did that 22 times over and said, we need to be careful to slow down. We don't want to miss anything that happened. We don't want to miss all of what God might be saying to us through this moment. And so let's walk deliberately and slowly through it all. The other thing that asking how carefully does is it allows you to examine your role in the issue, your role in what happened. And let me just be clear about this. Sometimes when you ask how, you don't have a role to play. There was nothing you did to cause a tsunami or a hurricane or a tornado. Sometimes there are just disasters that take place and we ask how and we are confused and we are perplexed, but there was nothing that we did to contribute to that disaster. And that's important because sometimes people harbor such guilt around these things. And I want to make sure there are two different approaches to this. But there are moments when we've had great relational breakdown in our life, where we have great strife with other people. And when we ask how in those moments, we must ask how carefully so that we make sure that we actually do think about what was my role in that? Did I contribute anything to this problem? People doing recovery programs have known that we need to examine our own role in the issue for years and years and years. Step four of the original Alcoholics Anonymous 12-step program comes directly from the Book of Lamentations. Step four is this. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And they got that directly, according to their own words, from Lamentations chapter 3, verse 40. It says this, let us test and examine our ways and return to the Lord. When we carefully ask how, it gives us space to think about our own life and examine what role we may have played in the issue, or even just to examine how our life is different now because of this issue. We are to ask how collectively. We are to ask how carefully. And thirdly, we are to ask how honestly. the acrostic pattern, is honest about the nature of the loss. It's an A to Z lost. In Lamentations, it does not skirt that at all. It says this loss is complete, it's total, it's A to Z. In chapter 3, the triple alphabetic acrostic, again, it's honest. It's completely honest. Hey, this is A to Z. And you know what it kind of feels like? It actually feels like A to Z, A to Z, A to Z. It feels like it won't stop. Again, it's just brutally honest, this text. And then finally, chapter 5, where they abandon the acrostic pattern but keep the 22 verses, it's brutally honest. It's almost as if chapter 5, the author says, I can't hold it in anymore. I'm just going to let it fly. Here it is, God. Here's everything I've been thinking. It can't be contained in a nice little package, God. It's too painful. I'm just letting it out there. Lamentations, if it's anything, it's an honest look at pain in the world. It also contains several vivid pictures of this pain, honest pictures. Again, I'll say it, brutally honest pictures. Let me give you a few of them. Chapter 1, verse 11. All her people groan as they search for bread. They trade their treasures for food to revive their strength. Look, O Lord, and see, for I am despised. Chapter 2, verse 5. Again, brutal honesty. The Lord has become like an enemy. He has swallowed up Israel. And sometimes we're just too scared to say that out loud. God, are you my friend? Or are you an enemy, Lord? He has swallowed up all its places. He has laid in ruins its strongholds. And he has multiplied in the daughter of Judah mourning and lamentation. And finally, I believe this is the most painful of the pictures in the book of Lamentations, chapter 2. Verses 11 and 12. My eyes are spent with weeping. My stomach churns. My bile is poured out to the ground because of the destruction of the daughter of my people, because infants and babies faint in the streets of the city. It's a picture of someone so upset by what has taken place, they vomited. They're just vomiting in the street because of the pain that they feel. Verse 12, they cry to their mothers, where is bread and wine? As they faint like a wounded man in the streets of the city, as their life is poured out on their mother's bosom. It's a picture of children dying in their mother's arms. Lamentation says, when you ask how, don't hold anything back. Ask it honestly. Don't leave anything on the table. God is ready to hear your honest cry, whatever it might be, in the midst of your pain. Next, how to ask how. Lamentations instructs us to ask how observantly. Look at chapter 3, verses 19 through 24. The poet writes this, remember my affliction and my wanderings, the wormwood and the gall. My soul continually remembers it and is bowed down within me. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore, I will hope in him. And I love that this is in the middle of the triple alphabetic acrostic. This is in the middle of A to Z pain, A to Z pain, A to Z pain. Again, in the middle of A to Z times 3 pain, the poet pauses and says, you know what? If I'm observant, if I look around, I can actually see that maybe, just maybe, God is at work. But this I call to mind. The poet takes time to say, let me really look and see, what is God trying to do? What is he communicating? Is there a message that maybe I have missed? I believe chapter 3, verses 19 to 24 are a call to remember in the midst of our pain. If you go to the the National September 11th Memorial in New York City. This is the book that they have created to help guide people through the process. It's called A Place of Remembrance. And when we have tragedy and pain, it is key to embrace a discipline of observant remembering. How was God moving in the past? And what might that say about how he's working in the present and will work in the future? Finally, how to ask how. Lamentations instructs us to ask how patiently. The book of Lamentations has an interesting ending. A lot of people want to believe that it ends with 3:24. Great is your faithfulness, O Lord. It's not where the book of Lamentations ends. If you flip to chapter 5 and look at verses 21 and 22, it actually ends in a pretty open-ended fashion with a rhetorical question that I believe would haunt its original listeners and can haunt many of us in our own suffering and pain. Lamentations 5, 21 and 22. Restore us to yourself, O Lord, that we may be restored. Renew our days as of old, unless you have utterly rejected us and remain exceedingly angry with us. And the book ends. Unless you've utterly rejected us. Restore us, God, unless. And it leaves open this possibility. But what if this is it? What if this is our new normal? And those questions that I asked at the beginning, will I ever laugh again? Will I ever feel safe again? Those were the questions we were all asking after September 11th, 2001. If you remember all of the late night shows, they couldn't tell jokes. It was like watching the news. And in 15 years later, we're all still asking the question, will I ever feel safe again? We can understand this tension at the end of Lamentations. Maybe this is the way life is now. Maybe God has utterly rejected us and remains exceedingly angry with us. In order to find the answer to this what if, this haunting rhetorical question at the end of Lamentations, you have to search other parts of the Bible. It's interesting, if you have time, you can even just flip to the next page in Ezekiel chapter 1 and you'll see there's an answer there. You can go to Isaiah 40 and you'll see that there's an answer there when the prophet cries out, comfort, comfort for my people. But I believe the ultimate answer to this question posed at the end of Lamentations comes in Mark chapter 15, verses 33 and 34. And this is what Jesus cries out when he is hung there on the cross. I believe this is the answer to the question posed at the end of Lamentations, the ultimate, the full answer that Scripture provides. Mark 15, starting at verse 33. And when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? If we ask the same questions that the book of Lamentations was asking all of us to process our own experience of pain, if we ask that of these verses here in the Gospel of Mark, here's what I think we get. What was lost? His life. What did he experience? Agony. What changed? He felt cut off from the Father. What cannot be forgotten? The darkness. All of the gospel writers are clear that there was darkness that descended on the earth at this moment. The darkness cannot be forgotten. And what did he say to God? My God, why have you forsaken me? You see, in this moment, Jesus became the true exile, the one truly cut off, so that he might offer us a return from the ultimate exile, the exile we experience from human sin and the separation that sin brings between our God and our fellow man. Where in your life are you asking how? Lamentations teaches us how to ask how. Collectively, carefully, honestly, observantly, all while patiently waiting for the coming of Jesus. Jesus Christ, who endured the ultimate exile that we might be offered ultimate comfort. Lynette and Tommy are going to help us ask the question, how, right now. And then we will have a time of collective remembrance of Jesus Christ together at the communion table.
Turn your face away. How long do you hear us when we pray? On and on, still we walk this pilgrim way. How long? Children find their rest. How long till you draw them to your breast? We go on holding to your promises. How long? Till you give us hope again. How long till your word will still the storm? How long till you bear your mighty arm? How we groan till you snatch us from the thorn. Till you wipe away the tears from every eye. Till we see our home descending from the sky. Do we wait in vain? Jesus, give us hope again. Sweet the dawn that ends the race. How long? Weak our hearts but strong our legs. Looking on, great that cloud of witnesses. How long? Till you till we see our home descending from the sky. Do we wait in vain? Jesus, give us hope again.